Welcome to the Field Talk Podcast from the Linder Farm Network. I'm your host, Dan Lemke. Exports are a vital part of the overall markets for Minnesota corn and soybeans. While domestic uses are strong for both corn and beans, global demand strongly supports commodity prices. In this Field Talk Podcast, we talk with leaders from two groups charged with building those global markets. Our first guest is Jim Sutter, CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council.
What are some of the things that are most exciting for you and most positive about what's going on with soybean exports?
Well, great. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. So we're very excited, you know, coming off of last year where we set a new value record for U.S. soy exports, second highest year ever from a volume perspective. We are off to a good start this year. We're watching very carefully what's happening down in South America. There's a big crop there. But, you know, it's been a little slow coming to the market. So people have continued to come to the United States. And our focus is to continue to try and differentiate U.S. soy and make sure, build a preference out there for U.S. soy. And we do that by talking about the sustainability, the difference in nutritional, the nutritional profile, and then just the reliability of the U.S. soy all the way from farm through the export channels, the reliability of actually getting the product to market.
And I'm assuming there's always opportunities to carve out new markets. Are there places that are of potential interest that folks might not, you know, instantly think of as markets for U.S. soybean products?
Yes. You know, that's something we're always looking for, is how do we diversify markets? Because we've got a lot of great markets, but we're always looking for more. So a couple that people might not think about, Algeria has just kind of come on as a market for U.S. soybeans. They've just kind of built up a crushing industry. They historically were an importer of meal, and the U.S. has had a limited amount of meal available historically. And so they've now started importing beans, which is great. And another country that just purchased a cargo recently for shipment is Iraq. You know, a country where the U.S. has had a big influence trying to help bring peace to that country. So it's great to see them now starting to import U.S. soybeans.
Now, obviously, in upper Midwest, we're seeing a lot of additional soybean crush capacity, which changes the dynamic a little bit. Meal exports, what's going on there to help try and find markets for that product?
Yeah, I think that's particularly exciting for people up in the northern part of the country where they've mainly been a bean exporter previously and mainly to one destination off of the Pacific Northwest. So when we talk about diversification, now having meal to export instead of only beans really helps with that diversification. So we think that that there are a lot of markets where that meal will go. Southeast Asia has been traditionally a good market. We think there's more potential there. Japan is not a huge meal importer, but a solid meal importer, and we haven't really had enough to supply them. A couple shipments have gone to them recently, and we look for more of that to happen. And then if you think about the Americas market, Chile has recently started buying some U.S. meal. Venezuela's come back as a buyer. And then, of course, if you go to the other side of the world, Europe is a strong importer of meal, and we think there are companies there that would like to buy more U.S. meal if we have it available. So we're excited about seeing U.S. crush more soybeans, have more meal available, and helping to get that marketed. One thing I should note, though, is we're careful to tell our long-term bean buyers from the U.S. that our studies show that the yield of U.S. soy is going to continue to increase enough so that we'll double our meal exports, go from 12 or 13 million tons up to 23, 24 million tons in the next 7 or 8 years, but we'll still have about the same amount of beans to export. So we don't want to lose our bean customers, but we want to increase our meal customers.
So I guess what are some of the challenges maybe domestically with shipping meal? I mean, there are going to have to be some infrastructure changes that are made in order to handle that. Obviously, you know, again, as you mentioned, Northwest set up to handle a lot of whole bean, a little bit different. Is that going to be an issue or something that can be, you know, relatively easily overcome?
Well, you know, we ask a lot of questions. We ask questions of the railroad. We ask questions of the companies that are involved. And they all tell us that they've got big plans to add capacity. They're investing in that. So we're watching carefully. We don't want to take it for granted, but we are told that they've got plans made to be able to handle that. So fingers crossed. We hope it will work out. You know, I suppose snowstorms will get in the way and those kind of things will cause problems. But I think people are really trying to think it through because they understand that there'll be a lot more meal going into the export channels.
Sure. how important is that farmer perspective and farmer leadership on the organization? Obviously, you have staff around the around the world getting the pulse, but ultimately bringing it back to kind of the getting farmer input. How valuable is that for what you guys are trying to do?
Oh, I think it's extremely valuable. You know, the farmers are our main investors. Our largest funding comes from the checkoffs. The national and the states, the QSSBs, and it's critical that we know what they're thinking. We kind of have their viewpoint of the future. One of the things I feel fortunate in is that we can take a long-term view as we're doing this market development work. When we're investing today in India, India is not going to be a market for tomorrow necessarily, but some years out. And farmers think that way. You know, they make investments on their farms that are long-term investments. So I think that's very fortunate. And I find farmers to be just very practical thinkers. And so I really enjoy the opportunity to work with them. And then on the fact that on the USEC board, we have a combination of farmers and exporter and allied member representatives. We I feel so fortunate to have this great mix of brain power we can utilize on our board to help give us strategic direction. And then we've got our teams around the world that go out and implement based upon that strategic direction.
So overall, exciting times, reason for, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota farmers to be optimistic about putting that seed in the ground, that it's going to find a home?
I think so. I think the, we just continue to see steady demand growth for protein. There's always things to worry about. We can worry about the strong dollar. We can worry about, global sort of unrest. But people want to eat, and that's the fortunate thing is that we're ultimately in the food production business and then more recently here in the energy production business. And I think food and energy are two things that are going to have pretty inelastic demand. So I think farmers can continue to do the great job they're doing and producing their crops in such a good, sustainable way, which is something people around the world are asking more and more about. And I'm so happy we can tell them about what our U.S. farmers are doing.
Kerry Siffrith is vice president of the U.S. Grains Council, which promotes the use of U.S. barley, sorghum, corn, and related products, including ethanol and distillers' grains.
An active time for grain movement. Folks are very interested in what's happening as far as the movement of, corn, sorghum, ethanol, things like that. What is kind of the lay of the land? How are things going in terms of movement of those products?
Well, after two very good, successful years of corn exports and even DDGS and ethanol exports, we've had a little bit of a slow start this marketing year. Things are starting to pick up. We're seeing more corn sales and even in the vessel lineups in the Pacific Northwest area of exports where they're pulling shuttle trains out of southern western Minnesota and the Dakotas to get out there. So we're seeing business there starting to pick up. For those Asia Pacific markets, our long-term good market to the south in Mexico, even with the issues, they're still buying corn at a good pace. And so yeah, we're even ethanol, we're seeing decent shipments taking place. And our number one customer to the north there in Canada continues to be our top customer and a good steady buyer of U.S. ethanol.
Now, you touched on Mexico. Obviously, a lot of activity happening there with their proposed ban on GMO products. What kind of an impact is that having, and what could that mean for movement of those grains?
Mexico just reissued a new decree, which basically makes white corn imports with GMO white corn imports into Mexico, basically banning that, or at least not allowing white corn imports for use for food right away as of last week, or even 2 weeks ago, I guess now. Yellow corn for feed use is allowed. GMO yellow corn for feed use is allowed until they come up with a reasonable substitute, which and they don't have a time frame on that, and I'm not sure how they do that. But so the yellow corn for feed use is flowing. We still have a big market of yellow corn that's going in for wet milling for starch and sweeteners and other industrial uses of corn. That's a little bit up in the air. USDR has issued the request for technical consultations, which starts the 45-day clock on that for actual consultations to officially take place. And if a resolution isn't found after 45 days, then we can take this to the dispute settlement process of the USMCA agreement. So.
Now, ethanol movement, I understand there's been some good direction towards Japan, things moving favorably. Talk about those, if you would.
And Japan buys ethanol from the U.S. in the form of ETBE, so using ethanol instead of methanol in ETBE rather than MTBE. Three and a half years ago, the U.S. was getting zero of that market share. And our office in Tokyo, along with our members, work real hard. So we opened that up. So at least 40% of that could come from the U.S. Now we're up to 66% of that. Used to be 100% Brazilian ethanol would come to Houston, be made into MTBE. Now we've been working. We expect Japan to be making an announcement here on April 1st. And we hope to allow us to get 100% of that market. Doesn't guarantee us, but allows us, we're capped at 66% market share. But it's, even today, that's about 120 million gallons of U.S. ethanol going to Japan in the form of ETBE today. If we were to get allowed to do the full 100%, that could be a little over 200 million gallons. And then at the same time, we're working with Japan to look at direct blending of ethanol rather than just using ETBE. And lots of discussion on SAF, sustainable aviation fuel made from ethanol in Japan. And some of the players there are very, very excited about that. So it's a big market today, you know, about 120 million gallons annually, and a lot of prospects for that to continue to grow as we try to move towards direct blending and this SAF possibilities in the, you know, coming, let's say, 2 to 4 or 5 years. So
now, obviously, for the last number of years, we've had to deal with some transportation, you know, supply chain issues. Are things clearing up there? Is that still a concern for Grains Council, or what's that situation?
It's always a concern. We're always watching it because, you know, transportation is key for us to be able to move our products, whether it's from southern Minnesota, the Dakotas, to get out to the West Coast, to the Pacific Northwest, to get products to the river. You know, this last fall, we had very, very low water levels on the river that really constrained barge movement. There are still barges moving, but extremely high cost to move grain by a barge down the river system. Obviously, up in northern Minnesota, we're still closed. All that, where it looks like we're maybe weeks away from that starting to over. But the water levels, you know, down in Memphis and St. Louis have come back, and so we're seeing more regular barge movement there. You know, we avoided the rail strike. That was a big concern. I don't know, you know, that's behind us, but I don't know if all the rail companies are 100% or all their workers are 100% satisfied. So that's something to definitely continue to keep an eye on as well. And we have a lot of products that move in by containers. And so during the COVID pandemic, and the container availability was really restricted just because of the desire to get empty containers back out to predominantly China, but other parts of Asia, they didn't care whether they were empty or full. That's kind of, the market's kind of resolved itself, and we're seeing a lot of availability of containers to get those containers, empty containers, back into the Midwest so we can put DDGS, soybean meal, other things, and get that regular flow of those agricultural products back out to places like Southeast Asia, Korea, Taiwan, even products flowing in containers to China as well. So
no shortage of things for you to keep your eyes on and your fingers on the pulse.
Correct. There's always something going on, and we're looking at what's out there the next 90 days, 6 months, a year. But at the same time, we develop markets for 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the line. So we're, you know, balancing what do we need to do in the short term to help resolve these hiccups, and what are we doing to develop new markets for, you know, 3, 5, 10 years down the line.
Thanks for listening. Find other podcasts at linderfarmnetwork.com and get your daily farm news and market analysis from your local LFN affiliate.